Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, our next guest is an award-winning comedian from Scotland who has written a book about her life story, which talks about her tough upbringing in Glasgow, facing terminal cancer and an incredible career in comedy. Her book is called Janie, The Woman That Won't Shut Up. Janie Godley, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So I can't stop laughing at there being a bear invasion on a pitch, which means something completely different in Glasgow. That made me giggle so much.
Is that a streak or no? No, it's something else.
No,
again.
Bears is a nickname for a football team. So
Right. There you go. Listen, one of the team read the book in passing, as in the cover. And yep. They thought the name of it was Janie, That Woman Won't Shut Up.
It is that. You know, it is written in an esoteric style that few people will understand, but those who get it will definitely get it.
You know, on page 9, you quote that line, tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Yeah,
that could be your epitaph, really, couldn't it?
Yeah, well, there's quite a lot of epitaphs. I'd like to think my epitaph will be, she was quite shouty, but she always wore a good bra. I don't want it to be something too philosophical.
Yeah, yeah. Where do we start with you? You start the book with your cancer diagnosis, so I suppose you thought that was a good idea, so we'll go with that.
Yep.
So when was that, Janie?
I was diagnosed in November 2021 when I was on tour, and I just had a feeling that there was something really weird going on in my body. I want to say up front, I want to give out the symptoms of ovarian cancer because they're very sneaky and we may as well get this off at the top. Sorry, but my voice sounds a bit strange. It's just that I got chemo yesterday and it always affects my throat. So the symptoms of ovarian cancer are sneaky, sneaky poo. So listen up. The first symptom is feeling really bloated. Well, every woman feels bloated. So that's a difficult one. Mm-hmm. The second one is weeing a lot. Everybody wees a lot. But it was the third symptom that got me. And it was when I went to eat, I felt full and I couldn't eat. And if you've got a normal, healthy appetite and suddenly you can't eat and you feel very bloated when you eat, go to the doctor and ask for a screening for ovarian cancer.
Okay.
Just say the words and advocate for yourself. That's what I did. Too late, I did.
And you had seen a tweet by Julia Bradbury.
Yes, Julia had said those symptoms out in the tweet. And that's what made me go, oh my God, that's what I've got. And I went home. I was in London at the time, or Aberdeen, I can't remember. And I went home and I went straight to the doctor. And luckily, my GP lives very close to me. And luckily, I know that I'm very lucky that my GP listens to me. A lot of GPs don't necessarily listen to women. And she did, and she took blood straight away. And the next day, I was in the hospital getting a scan that exposed an 11-centimetre cyst on my right ovary.
That's a big cyst.
It is. It's, you know me. It's got to be big.
I'm just trying to... 11 centimetres, that's sort of what? An inch? Old money.
Yeah.
That's 10... That, no, 11 centimetres is what? What is...
I don't know. I don't like talking to men about inches. No, listen to me. Here's the thing. When I got that diagnosed, I also got told I had COVID, so I couldn't get operated on. So I had to wait 7 weeks for the operation. And then that 7 weeks, the cyst burst. So that made things a wee bit more complicated. But then in January 2022, I got a hysterectomy, as they call it, debulking. I'll never get that word out of my head. And then I went on chemo, and I've been on chemo and immunotherapy and PARP inhibitors ever since. I'm now on to my third, fourth, fifth set of treatment, and we don't know how long this is going to push it back for, because it is terminal cancer.
It is terminal, is it? That's...
Yeah.
Okay, so dealing with that and telling your loved ones, you're married to Sean, Ashley is your daughter.
Yeah.
Was anybody with you when you got the diagnosis?
Yeah, my wee pal Shirley came to pick me up, and I went outside, and as soon as I got in the car, I phoned my very close, the Kelly family, my best friends, he's my brother Tony, practically. I told them straight away. I told my brother and sister. I told my husband and my daughter, and I told my agent last, because he only gets 15% of the information. And You know, it was hard. It was really hard telling people who love me. It's basically like throwing a grenade into everybody's life and saying, right, okay, I've got a thing and I'm dying. Boom, you just need to deal with it. Because I won't be dealing with it. I'll be gone, you know. So yeah. It's a very difficult conversation to have, especially, you know, with people who love you and support you.
Because you're very close to your daughter, and like that's not a given with a mother and daughter. You know, people assume it is, but it's not
a given.
Well,
we've been close to getting, she often says, I'm going to demenses you at some point. If you don't know what that reference means, look it up. But yeah, she's ready to have a go at me at times, but I love her. She came here to the studio with me and I said, do you want to come in? But she does her own show upstairs on a Friday night. Yeah. She said, no.
So she does stand up and she writes and she acts and
And she's got her own BBC radio show on a Friday night and she is the co-writer and star of Dinosaur, the BBC iPlayer. It's out in Hulu in America, and she's a writer and a stand-up, and she's a very good writer, and she's a great stand-up. Ashley, like me, finds stand-up very, very easy. I mean, we used to do Tony's Place down in Wild Cabaret. I used to run a comedy club there. Mm. And when any comedian dropped to it, we'd get Ashley to fill in. And it's quite funny because the comedy club is actually a cabaret venue, and backstage they have, you know, those big cabaret feathers and all that stuff. And
bows
I said to Ashley,
sort of
I said to her, do not touch the props, because the cabaret people are very, very sensitive about the props. And when I introduced her, she came out with 6 feet feathers on her back, didn't even reference them, just wore them for badness because she was told not to. Yeah, she's great. I love her. She's
funny.
What
age was she, Janie, when she did her first?
She was 11 when she started, and she had her own show at the Edinburgh Fringe at 13, because I'm not allowed anything to myself.
You're not allowed what?
Anything to myself.
Oh, right. Yes, I see.
And she heckled me when she was 11. She used to come to the family show in the big tent at the Fringe on the Green, and she'd shout, tell us a joke, you stupid woman, and shout at me. And I'm like, and people are like, there's a kid out there really with sharp heckles. I'm like, that's my kid. That's mine.
So both of you find the stand-up very easy, whereas most of us would find it to be the scariest thing in the world. You know, public speaking is in the top three fears. And if you add, you were promising to make people laugh onto that, well, then it's going to be number one for most people, isn't it?
Nah, it's dead easy. What you do is you go on stage and you have 17 things in your bucket. So if they don't like one thing, they'll like another. Okay, you don't like talking about bears invading the pitch. Okay, what about women who can't walk in their shoes? Okay, you don't like that. Here is a story about when I was a kid and we didn't buy a dog. We just picked one up in a spare ground. Okay, you don't like that. Here is a story about an advert I saw on TV when I was 5, and it was about a wee boy who took out a kite and he got electrocuted off an electric pylon. I was only 5 and I was eating my dinner. Who terrifies children? I have hundreds of stuff to talk about. So does she.
Now, your lives have been quite different, you know, as often happens. You could be described as a brutal childhood. I know there was lots of love and there was lots of laughter.
There was lots of love and lots of laughter, but I was abused as a child by a big flute bon orangeman, and I got him jailed and then he died. What a shame. So I had that, and then my mammy got murdered by her ex-boyfriend, and there was a lot of abuse and poverty, and there was a lot of times where I didn't have shoes, and there was a lot of times where I never had the right food. But that doesn't mean to say that I'm discounting that as the worst thing that can happen. I had a lot of love. I had a daddy who, despite being a functioning alcoholic who went to his work, my dad was the dad that walked up the street, and when all the kids were out playing football, he'd take off his jacket and join in with the match and play with kids and turn them upside down and have a laugh with us. He was very loving. I miss my daddy. My mammy, Annie, who definitely let me down because, you know, I told her I was being abused by her brother, and she held it in and told me to keep it quiet. But she was abused as a child and she had a terrible upbringing. So she only could do the best with the tools she had. But Mama made me laugh more than anything. I've got lots of friends who have got really good upbringings. They had lovely clean clothes. They never worried about rent. But they can't remember a thing their Ma told them because they weren't the communicators. Yeah. Annie might have been mad and on the edge of dangerous, but she taught me to read, she made me laugh, she taught me to swim, she let me tell funny stories, and I loved her, but she was flawed.
Yeah. The sort of life was stacked against you, and people talk a lot about breaking the cycle. And you've managed, it appears.
Well, I tried. Yes. Well, obviously, Ashley will have her own tale to tell when I die.
Yes,
it'll be Mummy Dearest, how I used to batter her with plastic sandals or something. But I tried my best. I got married quite young, but I didn't have a baby until I was about 6 years on, which in the East End of Glasgow is technically infertility. But anyhow, I had a baby, and then we put her through private school and we gave her a better life, and she got to Disneyland. But, you know, she had a tough time as well, because my husband has a lot of depression problems, and he has autism, as does Ashley. So hers was undiagnosed and his was confusing, because we thought he was just an idiot and an angry one at that.
Yeah.
But, and by the way, if anybody's offended at me saying this, 43 years I've been married to a man that tells me who his favourite Plantagenet is. So, unclench. Already served my time.
His favourite what?
Plantagenet. Do you want me to give you his phone number? It's a French house of royalty. Don't get me started.
Right.
Eleanor of Aquitaine is just on point.
But that's a huge problem, isn't it? Where people are undiagnosed and then the undiagnosis manifests itself in other mental health issues like depression.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
You know, depression is a big part of autism and being unable to communicate. And then if you're one of seven sons in a big gangster family, you're getting ignored and pushed to the back anyway. I mean, his nickname was... what was his nickname? His nickname was the scientist.
Right.
His nickname was the counter. His nickname was, you know, he had all these nicknames for him being very pernickety and tight about things, which should have been a sign.
But then,
the professor, we should have known.
But this was back in the day, you know, this is back in the 70s.
This is when Earth, Wind and Fire were number one.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm wondering, is comedy then an escape for you? Or when did you face up to the abuse? Because I've spoken to numerous people over the years and they bury it. And
Well, as soon as I met Sean, I told him. And he said, well, you know, we could easily get him sorted for your birthday. And I thought, that's not a birthday present. That really is not a birthday present. You need to know that. So I decided that all the men in the family are like, oh, we'll deal with him. And I thought, no, do you know what? I want to deal with it myself. And it wasn't until I spoke to a journalist and we did an article about child abuse. And she says, you know, you can still arrest him in historic abuse. You've got your sister who was also abused. So they put it to the police and the police took it to the Procurator Fiscal in 1994. And they put a warrant out for his arrest. And he ran away. And he got caught in the most embarrassing way. There was a car coming from England but up to Scotland, and they were looking for sort of terrorists, and they stopped him and they went, oh no, there's no terrorists in this car, but you've got a warrant out for child abuse.
Yes, yeah.
And that's how he got caught. I mean, that must have been quite embarrassing, and God knows where he put his flute. But anyway, they got him back to Glasgow and he went to court in 1996,
and Janie,
they got him found guilty.
Did you have to give evidence?
Yes, I went up first to save my sister.
What was that like?
It was absolutely the most... I would equate it to being told you get cancer.
Yeah.
It's that shattering. Because if I don't get a guilty verdict, then everybody's going to say I'm a liar. And that's a horrible feeling, not to be believed. I mean, it wasn't just me, it was my sister as well. And he didn't just sexually abuse us, he beat me up a good few times. So I've still got a scar in the back of my neck. He was a monster, and, you know, and when I got up there in court, I looked at him and I just couldn't stop staring at him thinking, and my daughter Ashley was about 8 at the time, and she says his first mistake was abusing you, his second mistake was assuming you were going to be awfully quiet. I thought, she's right. And
There's always a gag.
Ashley and I always had a gag, even when she was eight. She was always a gag. And
it's dark, it's very dark, but funny.
We make jokes about it all the time, you know. We laugh about it because, and I did that on stage. I once met Stuart Lee, the comedian, early on in my career, and Stuart said to me, you should stop telling gags and tell those stories about you and Ashley and your husband and the guns and the gangsters and the abuse. Why don't you just tell those stories? And I thought, God, does anybody want to hear that? So on 2002, I was doing what they call confessional comedy back then, way before MD Else was doing it. And I made it funny. I made it relatable. I made it honest. I made it authentic. And, you know, it can be called esoteric comedy, but it's mine.
You've won numerous awards. The Billy Connolly one was probably the one that you treasure most.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I was nominated and I thought, I'm not going to win it. And I have met Billy. We met in New Zealand, of all places, because meeting in Glasgow would have been too easy. So I was on tour and he was doing the voice work for The Hobbit and we were in the same hotel. Anyways, I went to the King's Theatre and it was in the middle of the documentary, Janie, which was being filmed, which you can still see on BBC iPlayer.
Yeah, we can't get it here.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yes, it is a shame. I really wanted to watch it. But
how can you not get it?
Because we're in a different country. You may have noticed that.
They've noticed that. So I will send you a DVD.
Please do. Anyways. Yes. Yeah. So it's the Billy Connolly Spirit of Glasgow Award, and you were nominated along with Scott Agnew, Craig Hale, Paul Black, and Kieran Hodgson. Right.
And Wee Susie. It was just brilliant. And then when my name was said, I was actually in shock. I thought, no, they've made a mistake. That can't. Why would a woman win anything? Because, you know, we don't get the prizes. My heart was the size of Govan, I'll tell you.
But you were feeling quite low at the time.
Yeah.
Because you had been cancelled.
Being cancelled is just the best thing in the world for your adrenaline. It's really weird because you get cancelled and then people find all these things that you've said and you've already said them 11 years ago and then you go, sorry, and they went, you don't sound sorry. I went, well, it's good that you can now finally notice the difference between how a word sounds and what a word means. It's weird that you figured that out now. So, yeah, I got cancelled and a lot of people said that you shouldn't have said this, you shouldn't have said that. Nowadays, I look at it now, even 2 or 3 years down the line, and you look at Twitter and you see people like Andrew Tate saying the worst words possible, and you hear MPs saying the worst words possible, and you're like, yeah, this might have been politics as well. This might have been the fact
voted. But when you looked back at what you said, you were genuinely
sorry. I said it. Absolutely.
Yes,
I apologised immediately and said, you know, the reason I know that I'm not a racist is because racists hate me. So that's when you know you're okay. Mm. See, when the racist flag-banging folk hate you, you wake up and go, I might have cancer, but at least the racists still hate me.
And so, why? Yeah. Because that affected you so badly to the point of, like,
yeah, I wanted to end my life.
Yes.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible.
So in tracing, because you talk about this in the book, in tracing back then on what you said, and we're not going to say it again, but what you said, racist comments, why do you think you said it at the time or where were you or what state of mind were you in?
Well, it wasn't directed at a race. I said... I was commenting on a TV show. I was commenting on, I think it was that Simon Cowell, Americans Get Talent. And there was a woman on it just kept annoying me. And I kept on saying, why is this? And there was 4 white women and 1 black woman on the panel. So I said, why is this annoying black woman still talking?
Right.
And I said it. I could have just said, that horsey face woman's annoying me. I wish you'd shut up. History would be fine.
Yes, okay.
But I said black women, which is wrong. I shouldn't have been past remarkable. This was 2011. B, I shouldn't have pointed out her colour. And C, I never said it to her.
Yeah.
I never wrote it to her. I never tagged her in.
I know, but the world we live in, it's out there,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, and I get that.
Yeah.
But when you say sorry, people say, well, you don't mean you're sorry. I was like, but how do you know the difference between a meaning and a word? If you did know the difference between it, it's okay to cancel ideas, but you can't cancel people. You can't do it. People will have got too good.
And Jenny, what about Twitter? Because you know,
it saved my life. Julia Bradbury put up a tweet.
Yes, but there
and
you
it
go.
Saved my life.
Yes. But it nearly ended your life as well.
It did nearly end my life, but you know, I came through it. And now, when I look back on it in retrospect, I'm like. I was getting a lot of rape and death threats, loads of them, from American men because I had put up the sign about Trump. And I wrote, they're like, you're ugly, too ugly to rape. And I'm like, mate, you look like you're from Chernobyl. Apparently that was the worst thing I could ever say. But it's okay for people to joke that I'm as funny as a burning orphanage. So yeah. If we're going to look at the words and we're going to look at jokes, and let's look, what is worse, me saying you look like Chernobyl or you saying I look like children dying in a burnt orphanage?
But Jenny, here's the thing that, you know... You've been around a long time and you've lived a life. We've established that. And would you not stay off Twitter? Is it, you know, would you?
I stayed off it for 3 months for a Radio 4 show. And no, I think it's okay to argue. You see, here's the thing. Men will say to me, it's mostly men, not all men, hashtag not all men, roll your eyes, will say to me, you incite pylons and you start arguments. What I do is, and every Irish mammy can hear me right now, is I answered back.
Yeah.
I never single anybody out. I never go and find Johnny Big Bull 262 and write to him. I reply. So if you write to me that I'm too ugly to be raped, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to come back with a brick bat like, I'm sorry, I would let you rape me, but my eyes still work. So I'm there back at it. Yeah. And if that offends people, here's a plan. Don't look at me. Don't speak to me.
So as a result of nearly being cancelled and having suicidal ideations, you went to therapy. Was that the first time you'd been to therapy?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, all right. So with all that abuse and everything, you'd never been to therapy.
Well, I did try, but back then it just wasn't the same. People just kept saying things to me like, have you thought about taking up jigsaws or something, and I'm like, what? So this was different. This was a crisis therapist, and she was brilliant. And she said to me, I have been following a lot of what you do on Twitter. She went, two of the men who accused you of being racist and horrific are actually up in court for attempting to assault women.
Right.
So there is a level of hypocrisy that you can't believe. And most of the people who did attack me have all lost their accounts and they're all suspended and yada, yada, yada. And the therapy helped me make sense of me arguing back. And I've always been an argue back type of person.
Well, I can understand that from your life.
She never said to me, don't argue back. She's like, no, go for it, you're right. So I did.
I know, you know, inspirational, brave, all that. You don't like any of that rubbish, no.
It's a load of baloney.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
But we women that get up every single morning with five kids and two in a pram and humping them down the stairs through the garbles, going to clean offices to put food in her kit. And dealing with cancer. She's inspirational. Me? With the NHS that's amazing here in Scotland, with a life where I'm fine, I'm mortgage free, I bought a house telling jokes and annoying men and being cancelled, bought me a car. So I'm doing all right. And when I die, I'll die. But everybody's got to die or something.
Yeah. The woman that won't shut up, Janie. Janie Godley, can we talk again at some stage? Because we've only scratched the surface there. And
we should do a whole tour.
Yeah.
Oh, I was in Cushendale recently. I loved it.
Oh, yes,
with
beautiful
Berna
there.
And Pascal. Yeah, let me come back and we'll come over to Ireland.
Do you know there's a sign outside Cushendale? It says, you are now entering an area of outstanding beauty. Just in case you didn't know.
I know it is. It's absolutely.
It is.
So this is a shout out to all the people in Cushendale who let me join their pub quiz. Thank you, Pascal and Berna.
Janie Godley, thank you for your time today. And Janie's memoir is in bookshops now, The Woman That Won't Shut Up. Thank you. Mind yourself, Janie. Mind yourself.
Mind yourself.
Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.